Hadassah, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Becheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Demystifying Hilchos Nida, a podcast series with Mrs. Rivki Kaplan, in which we'll explore the historical background and underlying halachic principles behind the laws of Nida. Mrs. Kaplan is a shlucha, teacher, lecturer, and yuetzet halacha with over 20 years of experience teaching and mentoring women in the area of Taharas HaMashpacha. She will be building on her experience and expertise in Hilchos Nida to give us a deeper appreciation for the halachas that we practice every single day. Please keep in mind while listening that this series is intended for educational purposes only and should not replace seeking qualified rabbinic guidance for any application to practical halachic scenarios. Our goal for this series is to enhance your observance of Taharas HaMashpacha and to inspire you to observe the halachas in the most optimal way. Please note that each individual episode is only one part of a bigger picture, so we encourage you to listen to all the episodes in the series in order to get a complete understanding of the content we discuss here. Thank you so much to Leah Beidelman for sponsoring today's episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our next episode in our series on Hilchos Nida with Rivki Kaplan. So today we're going to be talking about a very interesting aspect of the way we practice Hilchos Nida today, which is that you may be familiar with this concept that anytime a woman sees a flow, she has to wait 5 days before doing her Hefsek Tara and beginning to count her seven clean days. And if you've been following the series up until now, you'll notice that we've never encountered that in the original sources, in the Torah or in the Mishnah Gemar, this concept of 5 days. So where does that come from? Where does that idea of having to wait 5 days before we can do our Hefsek Tara and start counting the seven clean days, what's the source for that? And how do we understand that?
Okay, yeah. So we may not have encountered it in our episode, but Baruch Hashem, it does have a source straight up in the Torah. And it was something that was practiced even during the time of Nida and Zavah D'Oraita. But I'll explain in a moment why it was much more uncommon. Okay, much less common. I think that's a better way of saying it, right? So let's step back for a minute and understand the original place where we have this notion. Well, it's not going to be 5 days. It's going to be 3 days. And I'm going to have to walk you through how we got from 3 days to five, okay? Or four. And I'll explain those numbers in a moment, right? So when the Jewish people are preparing for Matan Torah, right? Like this is the moment that we've been waiting for. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the command and he tells them, in addition to the other preparations, you know, that they had to have, he tells them, for 3 days prior to the giving of the Torah, I want all couples to refrain from intimacy, okay? And Rashi helps us understand why. And Rashi says, why is that? And he says that a woman that has had intimacy, and if she would have some kind of seminal discharge, or the halachic term for that is poletet shechvat zera, okay? She would experience some kind of seminal discharge. If it is within 3 days of intimacy, that semen is still viable. It can still be fertilized and it can still create a pregnancy. And so that particular discharge causes a form of toma. We're not going to go into the discussion of where and why and how now, right? We're just going to take it as face value. That if a woman were to experience a form of a seminal discharge within 3 days of intimacy, okay, it creates a particular toma. Now, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted, and this was, you know, of course, from Hashem's command, that all the Jewish people, and particularly it was important to him, that the Jewish woman as well be in a state of Tara so that they could be there when Hashem came down at this extremely pivotal moment and gave us the Torah, right? So he says, wait, I need all of you to be there. It's so important to me, the men and the women. And in order for that to happen, I need you to refrain from intimacy so you don't wake up on the morning of Matan Torah, discover that you've had some kind of seminal discharge. Oh, no. Now I'm in a state of impurity until evening, and I am going to be unable to be an eyewitness at this incredible moment. And so this is the first time that we're actually introduced to this notion. But I just want to add, before we get into the law, you know, the technicalities of the ramifications halachically, for me, reading that, it felt like so validating that Hashem was basically saying, it's not good enough to me that you'll hear about this later that day when your husband's come back from Matan Torah. No, I need every single one of you Jewish women to be there as an active participant, to receive the Torah as an eyewitness. Because we know that when you receive something in a very active eyewitness manner, the relationship that you then have with it is completely different. And so this command that was given to refrain from intimacy was really with the Jewish women's best interest in mind, okay? So that's in that regard. So as a result, they refrained from intimacy, and every Jewish woman was able to be there and play, you know, an eyewitness role at this extremely pivotal moment for us as a Jewish people. So we now understand that intimacy can cause some kind of toma within 3 days, right? Then there's an argument in the Gemara. And the argument in the Gemara is, well, what does 3 days really look like? Does 3 days mean 2+ days? Does 3 days mean 3 full days? What are we talking about? And there's a lot of back and forth. But the conclusion is that the Chachamim say that 3 days actually means 6 onot. What is an onah? Onah is a day or a night, right? So you have your daytime hours and you have your nighttime hours. And the Chachamim say that for 6 onot, okay, a woman within 6 onot of intimacy, if she were to experience this discharge, it would cause her to be in a state of tuma. Now, what does this have to do with the Shiva Nikiyam? What this has to do with the Shiva Nikiyam is that if I'm in the middle of counting my 7 clean days, okay, and then I experience this seminal discharge, it cancels out that particular day. So the halachic term is lo ole velo soter, meaning this particular day is not counted, but it doesn't cancel out all the 7 days, right? So imagine a woman, she could even be on her first day of her Shiva Nikiyam, and she experiences the seminal discharge, right? So she's in the process of Tahara, and she's currently experiencing a form of impurity. That form of impurity pauses her Tahara process. But what happens if she doesn't notice it? So she thinks she's good. She thinks her Tahara process is just going along as it's supposed to be. But meanwhile, so she has day one, which is really, wow, you should have paused. No, but she doesn't know that. Day one, and so what ends up happening is she immerses in the mikvah on what she thinks is day number 7, but really is day number 6, okay? So let's step back for a second. So we have these 3 days. A lot of back and forthing in the Gemara, and the conclusion is that it has to be 6 complete onot. And if it's not, and you would experience it within those 6 onot, right? It would pause your Shiva Nikiyam, okay? So I want to just give a very kind of like broken down example so that you appreciate what I mean by these 6 onot, okay? And then we'll carry on the conversation. So say, for example, a couple were to be intimate on a Sunday night, okay? So night could start at 7 o'clock in the evening and they're intimate close to midnight, right? Now, what would happen if the very next morning she would see that she was bleeding? Okay, and it was just a stain and it would immediately stop. Now, what if she would want to right away? Remember, we know she sees bleeding for 1 day, she has to count Shiva Nikiyam. So what if she would immediately want to start her 7 clean days, right? So she does her Hapsik Tahara and she starts her 7 clean days, and unbeknownst to her, on the second day of her 7 clean days, she experiences a seminal discharge. And ultimately, she ends up going to the mikvah, like we said, 1 day earlier than is permissible. So the Chachamim said, wait, okay? And you need to have 6 complete onot. So what do 6 complete onot look like, okay? So those of you that are have pen and paper handy as you're listening to this, you might find this useful, okay, to just kind of like jot this down as I mention it, right? So Sunday night would be the first part of one ona, okay? Monday day is your second ona. Monday night is your third. Tuesday day makes your fourth ona. Tuesday night makes your fifth ona, okay? Now, Wednesday day is your sixth ona, but Wednesday night completes the few hours that you had been missing from Sunday night when you were intimate, because it has to be six complete onot, right? So only when you wake up on Thursday morning, right, which is 4 days, right? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's the fourth day since intimacy. Only then would you be able to do your hefsek tahara. And then you could begin counting your clean days. Your first day would be Friday. Okay? So in essence, what I've said over here is really 4 days. Remember? Because you had intimacy Sunday night. And then you had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right? Thursday, you can now do your hefsek tahara. So 4 days have passed, okay? And then on Friday, you do your hefsek tahara. I'm sorry, on Friday is your first of your Shiva Nikiyim. So what I've set up until now is that we went from 3 days being translated to mean six onot, and six onot is 4 days, okay? Because of the missing hours in the beginning that have to be completed towards the end. Is that making sense, Adasa? Yeah. You following me? You got your pen and paper handy? Yes. Okay, great, right? So now we've talked about 3 days. We have translated that, or the Chachamim translated that into six time periods, if you will. And so we have at least a minimum of 4 days, right? But we've been talking about 5 days all along, and that's what many of us are familiar with. So how do we go from 4 days? Okay, 4 days I understand, because I need six complete onot, right? So where does 5 days come into play?
Sorry, Rifki, before you go into the 5 days, just so two clarifications. One is
sure.
So it's interesting that when the Chachamim are saying we need six complete einas, right, in order to that's the reason for that time frame is because the assumption is that the semen is only viable for that period of time. That's their assumption.
Exactly.
Okay.
So long as the semen is viable, it creates a tuma. As long as it's no longer viable, it no longer creates a tuma, right? Now, it could be that a woman, when she's not counting her seven clean days and she's intimate, she'll also experience some kind of seminal discharge. And in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, if she was a Kohanic woman, and she was, you know, just in her clean day, she was just like, she wasn't a Nida, she wasn't a Zava, she wasn't counting anything per se, and she wakes up on a Sunday morning and she's been intimate within the last 3 days, and she experiences a seminal discharge, she would be tummy, and she would have to immerse in the mikvah, and then she would become pure by evening, right? It was just like a one-day kind of tuma. And like we had mentioned in the first episode, how tuma and tara played a very big role in our lives during the times of the Beit HaMikdash, especially if you belong to a Kohanic family, right? Once that whole area of the Beit HaMikdash is unfortunately on pause, and it has no relevance, so to speak, in a practical level in our day, when does this have relevance? This have relevance when I am in a Tahara process. When I am in a Tahara process and I experience a different kind of tuma, lo ole velo soter. For, you know what? Sometimes I'm in a Tahara process and I experience a tuma that is soter. For example, if I'm in my seven clean days and for whatever reason I start to bleed again, right? I cancels everything because it's the same tuma, so it cancels everything. This is a different kind of tuma, so it just pauses it, okay?
Right, so that was going to be my next question is that, because yeah, this type of tuma is something which doesn't really have relevance generally speaking today. But you're saying, is this a general rule with tuma and tara that anytime you're in the process of purification for one type of tuma, encountering another type of tuma, will that always interrupt the purification process? Or I guess what you're saying is it depends what type of tuma. Sometimes it will interrupt it, sometimes it will completely,
Hadassah, it's a good question. There is a hierarchy in tuma and tara. You know, some have sort of like a greater potency and some less. So I'm not sure exactly how to answer that accurately. But I could give you an example, like, again, if referencing episode number one, when we spoke about the different ways in which the Rambam and Rashi interpreted how a woman kept her nida and zava. So say, for example, she was in her nida window, and she was in her zava window, I'm sorry, and she was counting seven clean days because she had been a zava gdaila. And her seven clean days led right into her nida window. And she experiences nida. So it pauses it. It doesn't soter, it doesn't cancel out the seven clean days that she was in. But for so long as she's experiencing the bleeding, i.e. the tuma of the nida, zelo ole vezelo soter. Okay? She can't count those days. It pauses it, and then as soon as she's done, she goes back to completing her seven clean days. So that would be another example, according to the Rambam, where this mechanism would come into play.
Got it. Okay, so let's get to the exciting part. Where does 5 days come from?
Okay, so but before we get into the 5 days, I actually want to mention something else, right? Because we mentioned this right in the beginning of the episode, was that even though, of course, this notion that this Tumah could pause Shiva Nikiyim, it wasn't very common back in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, because remember, Shiva Nikiyim applied, when we're talking about Nida and Zava Doraita, it only applied for the Zava, which was really an abnormality. It didn't happen very commonly. Okay? So that's why it didn't really happen very commonly. And also, if she was a Zava Gdaila, she would be, in order to become a Zava Gdaila, she would have had to have been bleeding for 3 days already. So the time she counts her seven clean days, the odds are that she's already passed her six onot. And so it was a very uncommon scenario to play out, right? Now, because it was an uncommon scenario, it was something that wasn't often, discussed, so to speak. Now, once Shiva Nikiyim became much more common, because like we spoke about, she sees for 1 day, she has to count seven Shiva Nikiyim. It became very, very much a part of how we keep Nida today, Nida Derabanan. It was something that became like an integral part of the purification process, okay? So we spoke about 3 days, which the Chachamim calculate to six onot, which we say ends up being a minimum of 4 days, right? Then when you look into the time, and you look in the Rishonim, right? So there is a Rishon known as the Tumat HaDeshen, lived, I believe, somewhere in there about the 1300s. And he adds two very important caveats to this whole conversation. And he says like this, wait a minute, friends. What would happen if a couple were to be intimate and it would be Ben HaShmashot? It would be that sort of like twilight zone where we don't know if it's day and we don't know if it's night, right? And the couple, kind of being a little bit oblivious and caught up in their own space, would think it must be daytime, right? And so they would think it's daytime, and so they would count that as their first onah, but really, night had already set. And so they don't have that first onah. So their count of six onot would always be off by one. So the Tumat HaDeshen comes along and he says, we need to take extra precaution. And you cannot start your Tara process until 5 days have passed to ensure that you will never have a Shiva Nikiyim that would be interrupted by seminal discharge. Okay? So that's the first thing that the Tumat HaDeshen says. The second thing that the Tumat HaDeshen says is a rule, and I'll read it first in the halachic terminology, and it says, Lo shimshu atu shimshu, which goes to say, whether you were intimate or whether you weren't intimate. What does that mean? Say a woman wakes up one morning and she sees a ketem and she's like, things were just rushed, there was a little stress, tense. I haven't been intimate with my husband in 5 days anyway. Maybe I could just start my Shiva Nikiyim. I could do my Hafsek Tahara tonight and I could just start my Shiva Nikiyim. And the Tumat HaDeshen says, nothing doing. Lo shimshu atu shimshu. Whether you were intimate or you weren't intimate, in theory, you could have been. You're not allowed to start your Shiva Nikiyim until 5 days have passed. Now, I say there are some exceptions to that, and one of them is coming up. Yom Kippur, for example. i.e. when halacha forbids intimacy, i.e. it's technically not possible, right? Then you would be able to count Yom Kippur as your first day, right? So in other words, if a woman were to get her period, right? Now, I also want to add, just to lessen the grief for some of us, that 5 days is the first time that you could, so to speak, try a Hefsek Tahara. Well, not quite. I'll explain that a little bit further in the episode on Hefsek Tahara. What I'm saying is, if a woman has a long period, i.e. she always bleeds for more than 5 days, it's not really going to make so much of a difference. Meaning, like, you can't begin your Shiva Nekiyim until you have a clean Hefsek Tahara. You can't have a clean Hefsek Tahara until you start bleeding, right? Now, technically, where does the 4 days or the 5 days come into play? It really, really only affects women who have very short bleeding days. So if a woman has 3 days of bleeding, it wouldn't help her. She still has to wait a minimum of 5 days until she would be able to begin her Shiva Nekiyim, right? So now what I want to mention, and this is a very important thing to mention, is that when it plays out in the Shulchan Aruch, the Bet Yosef, okay, the Mechaber, he talks about 4 days. And that's why today, Svardiot follow primarily, not all, but primarily Svardiot follow the ruling of the Mechaber. And they only wait 4 days, okay? The Ramah is the one that incorporates the ruling of the, both rulings of the Trumat HaDeshen. And he is the one that rules that you would need to wait a minimum of 5 days, and lo shimshu atu shimshu, okay? So here's one of those areas in halacha where there is a very clear distinction between the way the Sephardic woman, abide by it, and the way the Ashkenazic woman abide by it, right? So that's bigadol, really what's going on, right? So again, just to summarize, we go back to the times of Matan Torah, where it was critical to the Eibishter that every woman have her presence be seen and felt at Matan Torah, refrain from intimacy for 3 days because the seminal discharge, while still viable for a pregnancy, will cause you to be tuma. Chachamim understand from that, well, after a lot of back and forthing, they say it's not just a matter of 3 days, but it's a matter of 6 full onot, which is a minimum of 4 days. The Trumat HaDeshen comes along and he says, wait a minute, what happens if it was during Bein HaShemashot? We need to have a minimum of at least 5 days. And in addition to that, lo shimshu atu shimshu, whether you were or you weren't intimate is not so much a part of this equation. If in theory you could have been intimate, some people even go so far to say, it doesn't even matter if your husband was out of town, because in theory you could have, so to speak. The only thing that would change that is, like I said, an example like Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur, where it is halachically not permissible for you to be intimate, which, by the way, when else do we see that? For example, say a woman is in the middle of her 7 clean days, and on her 2nd day, she has a problematic bdika, i.e. she needs to count her 7 clean days again, but she doesn't count another 5 days. Why? Because halachically, she has not been permissible to be intimate for the previous 5 days anyway, okay? So that's okay. So long as it's halachically, theoretically permissible, this rule would apply. Okay? So that's, I believe, in regards to the notion of how we get from 3 to 4 to ultimately 5. I do want to say one exception in regards to Ashkenazic women is that after hymenal bleeding, right? So after the first time that a couple is intimate, and they become usher to one another. They become, she enters a state, well, it's not really quite nida because it's not nida blood, but it's from the dam tulim, from the hymenal bleeding. She only counts 4 days. Why is it that she only counts 4 days? Because there is a notion that you don't put one gzera on top of another gzera. I.e., the chachamim don't over, like in other words, if they've forbidden one thing, they try not to, and there are exceptions to that as well. You know, you don't do a gzera me'al gzera. The notion of dam tulim is a gzera midirabanan. And so they don't also apply the additional gzera of the Trumat HaDeshen for the 5 days. Instead, they go with what the chachamim say, which is that of the 4 days. So that's also something that people might be familiar with, and they would be in those places where we would make that exception.
Fascinating. Thank you so much, Rifki. And next time we're going to start getting into Hefsektara and Shivanikiam and all of that, right?
Yes, absolutely. That should be an interesting one as well.